God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke, said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. What we ask from time to time on the show, perhaps not often enough, what is the top news story to God? I mean, there's so much news. And the news cycle never stops. There's this phrase in media called feeding the beast. Always need to be creating new content, new content, new content. Feed the beast. The beast, man, that's a phrase, isn't it? Feed the beast. So we have figurehead Biden, who's decided to tie the hands of the Trump administration by not only giving the Social Security Administration a $200 million new office, but saying that their employees can work from home for the foreseeable future. And apparently this is done in such a way that it'll be almost impossible for President Trump and Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy to turn that around. Well, that's minor. There is the news out of New York, the pictures, the images of the apparent shooter of the UnitedHealthcare CEO, the notes he apparently left on the bullets, being anti-insurance company statements, or at least anti-UnitedHealthcare statements. There's that. There's the coup, the quick coup in South Korea that happened and then unhappened, and the falling of the governments in France, and all the things one would expect in a fallen world where there's going to be wars and rumors of wars in increasing rhythm until comes that time where we really are in the end times. I'm not saying that's now because no one knows. But what is the top news story to God? We could look at the news of the Trump administration being built and unbuilt. We could look at Pete Hegseth, the attack on his nomination. Some could say he's being Kavanaugh'd. Others could say, no, this guy has a problem. There's a history. We could say, and I could play audio clip after audio clip after audio clip, people who served with him, women who worked with him, never thought he had a drinking problem. He was never inappropriate with me. We could play all that. We could talk about the accusations, his mother, I think, being kind of forced to go on Fox News and walk back her statement that she made to her own son, saying, "You are an abuser of women." But what is the top news story to God? Now, we can't say for certain what the top news story of God is because we can't think like God, but we can consult his word. We can spend time around people more advanced, more mature in the faith than we are. We can do that. We can pray to become more mature in faith. We can consult the history of the Bible, which is not just useful for instruction and rebuke and inspiration and teaching. It's also history of our interaction with God. It's an instruction kit on how to live your life in horizontal relationships and in the vertical one, us and God. It's how to interact with one another. It's how to treat your body and not treat your body. It's all those things. But what is the top news story to God? I will contend that until such time as the offer is no longer available because the time will have passed, that it is that free redemption is available through the blood of his son, Jesus Christ. I will contend that that continues to be the top news story to God, the good news, the gospel. Don't you agree? What's the subset of that? Here, I think, is the subset of this, and we talked about it yesterday, and please forgive me if I appear myopic. Please forgive me. It's what's being done to God's children's bodies. And it's not, quote, just the Supreme Court's oral arguments over the law in Tennessee, where the state of Tennessee has decided to protect kids from permanent, unchangeable, wrong sex hormones and surgery. And the surgeries are utterly brutal. I don't know how much detail you want to know about the surgeries, but I'll offer this up for you. For boys who want to pretend to be girls, who are too young and this is going to be biologically correct. Okay, this, if you're listening with kids, this is going to be biologically correct. If you don't know this, I'm going to tell you, this is putrid, it's gross, it's horrific. In 3, 2, 1. For young boys who are not old enough to have their penises inverted and made into a fake vagina to lead the way into the 18-inch wound that surgeons will cut between those boys' legs, the doctors will take some of the boys' intestines out and line that wound with skin from their intestines and call that a vagina. You want one of the chief complaints that people have when they grow up that doesn't self-clean? God miraculously made the women's genitalia self-clean. It is constantly infected. And all of the things that go with constant infections. Discomfort. God forgive me for saying it. Smell. The top news story to God. What are you doing to your bodies of your children? Why are you trapping them in something not my image? Why are you doing this? How spiritually captured are you? It's not, quote, just that, though. It's also my incredible frustration with this Republican-led congressional committee that pretends that Project Warp Speed was a success, or Operation Warp Speed. The pretense of this is just shocking to me. It's not a difficult thing to observe the fact that the promises made about these injections never came true. They were not safe, nor were they effective. They were never designed to be effective. They were never effective. They were never vaccines. We're not going to hear this in America, but you will hear this in Australia. A gentleman who is an integrative healthcare professional, integrative doctor. In other words, he practices integrative medicine that looks at the whole person. You know, like doctors used to do. Not just looking at an iPad to see what drugs you can be prescribed that day. He's been an advocate for integrative medicine for other people for 35 years. His name is Professor Ian Brighthope. And he's speaking in public in Perth, Australia. And the man cannot continue without crying. You're going to hear a point in this audio where it sounds like it's gone silent. It's not. It is a man struggling to not cry.
Australia has administered more than 60 million doses of these vaccines to over 20 million people. Australia's governmental health authorities have chosen not to monitor new or emerging cancer trends following the widespread use of these vaccines. It is troubling that the Department of Health has not made data on cancer trends post-vaccination publicly available. It is their responsibility to do so. This is a critical gap in public health oversight. Given the massive contamination levels of rogue residual DNA in the Australian vials, we must expect an ongoing rise in cancers and other genetic disorders in Australia. This issue is a potential long-term health crisis waiting to happen. This matter must be taken seriously by every Australian. We must advocate for immediate public health responses. We need our health authorities to begin monitoring these trends. Without immediate action, we risk leaving Australians vulnerable to a wave of preventable diseases that may devastate families and strain our healthcare system. These gene-based vaccines should never have been considered. The technology had never been proven to be effective in preventing coronavirus infections. The technology had been shown to be unsafe long before it was used in 2021.
I think we edited out this point in the audio, and you do that in radio because otherwise it sounds like what's called dead air. He was silent for about 45 seconds, trying to collect himself, this professor of integrative medicine. So we were asking, what is the top news story to God? And the top news story, I will contend, is still the fact that that redemption, the free gift of redemption through the blood of Jesus Christ, is still available. I believe that will be the top story until it's no longer available. So choose. But I also sometimes picture the throne of judgment. And I picture it for myself. You know, I know that I'm saved in the blood of Christ and I accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior and I try to abide, and sometimes it's so difficult. And they never said it would be easy. So I know I'm saved, and I do think about that moment at the judgment throne. Is Jesus going to say, hey, you're coming into heaven, but man, you really disappointed me here. It really hurt. The accuser was up here making these accusations about you, and I knew you were coming in, and I am your propitiation, and I died for you. But man, you came really close to crucifying me again. I really hurt. And then I think about this specter of the bizarre in Washington, D.C., at the Supreme Court hearing, where your government is making the case that because a child is sad and confused, they should be irreparably mutilated sexually and chemically. In a level of change, an industrial level approach to this that would make Nebuchadnezzar jealous. And I think about the throne of judgment then, where if these people don't repent, I can't imagine that there aren't cups of wrath over this. These people will kneel, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess, they will kneel. They will say, yes, you are Lord. And is it going to be that the Lord Jesus puts images in front of them of the wounds they created, the confusion they sowed, the lies they shared, the babies who weren't born, the families shattered? And what is he going to do to the Republicans who issued a report pretending that Operation Warp Speed, which created the most harmful and deadly so-called vaccine ever created, was a massive success? That it's a model to mimic. That's what they said. This is a model to work upon. Please understand this war within the Trump administration over the people who want to continue to pretend that Project Warp Speed was an incredible success, and people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who I pray is very sincere in wanting this stuff banned, the mRNA injections. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, the same. We must pray that that side wins this battle and that somehow President Trump can finally come around to admitting he made a mistake. It's so difficult for him to do. I know he said this during the campaigns. I've made many mistakes, but he hasn't yet said it about Project Warp Speed and about giving Tony Fauci the keys to America to run it. The top news story to God is still, I think, free redemption is available through Jesus Christ. Maybe the second top story today to God is stop mutilating my children's bodies. I'm Todd Herman. We'll continue on the Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. I did get to some emails, and one of them, well, I'll just get to the emails rather than tease them. One of them just makes me feel uncomfortable, but that's okay. You're allowed to make the host feel uncomfortable. In fact, you should do that because I hope I make you uncomfortable sometimes. I hope that we're brave enough on this radio show to sometimes cause discomfort. Not in the terms of a Howard Stern or something like that. It's never my intent. But discussion should be uncomfortable on a format like AFR. Should be. Because we seek to put God's word at the center of what we do. There's an audience of one, that's God. There's a family of many, that's all of our supporters who pay for this, and listeners who have yet to become supporters financially. So I hope there's some moments of discomfort. You get to make me uncomfortable. The easiest way to email me is to go to my show page for my, this is my podcast page. It's easy. It just comes directly to me. That's thetoddhermanshow.com. It's that easy. And drop a note there. And feel free to make me uncomfortable. One of these questions makes me truly uncomfortable. Before we get to that, I just want to share with you something that I wouldn't normally share. It's financial. It's geeky. This was in May 9th of 2022. So it's an older video. It's a guy who used to be, he'd been a St. Louis president of the Fed, influential president of the Federal Reserve. He resigned in, I think it was 2023, July thereabouts, to become a dean of a university business school. Okay. Now, I want you to hear this and think. Remove the magic word Federal Reserve. Remove that, or magic phrase. It's neither federal nor is it a reserve. It's a private group that makes money on issuing debt that we then pay back. It's so utterly broken. And yet that's the way things run. Listen to this man, brave enough to call out his own organization, the Federal Reserve, and explain why it shouldn't be trusted. Now, this is from the Wisconsin Bankers Association. Again, this was a few years ago that he said this.
We've missed our inflation target to the low side based on our preferred measure of inflation since 2012. So basically what happened was we announced an inflation target in the U.S. in 2012, and I was one of the leading proponents on that. Then we promptly missed it for 7 years or 8 years in a row. So if you were in business and you missed your sales target for 8 years in a row, you'd probably be out. So I'm still in my job. So I think we want to conduct policy in a way that makes it so that you actually do hit the 2% inflation target, that it's not okay to come in too low for a long, very long time, or too high for.
But it is okay. That's the point. It is okay. There's no target. The Federal Reserve has trapped themselves into a dynamic that I didn't understand until I started to spend a lot of time with my friend who's a fiduciary, chief financial officer of a company. They have two tools. Bring interest rates up, bring interest rates down. They've trapped themselves in this dynamic. And the thing that I hope people will understand one day is the wisdom of God's word about debt. Debt can own you. I mean, we think we own things, but they own us. Okay, so let's keep that in mind. But then also, this human wisdom. The Federal Reserve is going to control the economy. This small group of people making money hand over fist is going to control the economy for a while, and maybe for 200 years. And then when you've trapped yourself into either lower the interest rates or higher the interest rates, invent debt, turn it into fake money, let the Treasury illegally give that to big companies, we must understand something. There is a structural deficit that exists in our system. It is structurally unsound. It will crash. Now, they're going to control the crash. It's not going to be as violent as it normally would be because nothing is real. I don't mean to go all John Lennon. I know it sounds like the Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real. but nothing is real. When you can miss your target time after time after time again, like the Fed does, you are dealing with fiction, period. It's not reality. It shouldn't be. And yet, somehow it is. Alice in Wonderland. It's a theme this week, Alice in Wonderland. We'll get to a note here from David writing from Dallas, Texas. This is the one that makes me uncomfortable because it asks me to give advice, and I'm not an advice columnist. But nonetheless, it's a note to AFR, so we'll respect it. Dear Todd, I listened to your program on American Family Radio. I haven't yet used your podcast because I don't use podcasts. I'm a radio person, radio listener. I've heard you mention from time to time your fitness pursuits, and the other day you said that you had a 9.5% body fat, and you said that not in a sense it was prideful. I heard you say on the radio show, I hope this doesn't sound prideful, you were talking about your father who'd been obese and that you try not to be and you achieve that. Here's my question for you. I've always been flummoxed by weight loss. I've never found anything that works for me. Is there a simple way you could guide me into this? I love your program. I love that you put God at the center. Please don't consider it prideful that you've managed to maintain good health at your age. Love your brother in Christ. This is David. So David from Dallas, Texas. I don't know the specifics, David. You say flummoxed. It might be that you have something going on in your body that makes it very complex. Complex metabolism. So I'm not a doctor. That's why I feel uncomfortable about this. But can I just tell you something that really relates to the Bible? The more a food looks like what you would have found in the Garden of Eden, the better it is for you. The more a food looks like the way God made it, the less likely it is to make you fat or sick. It's hard to eat in a way that the Bible would make easy, the biblical times would make easy to get fat. Now, bread aside, we don't eat bread in this country that they ate in the biblical times. The grains are different. They've been molested. They've been changed. They destroy our bodies to a large degree, the processed foods. So put that one aside. But just picture this. Picture yourself in the Garden of Eden. Fruits and vegetables, tubers, starches, they're all there for you. Now, let's boil this down a little bit harder, or a little bit easier. Starches are generally not that easy to eat without some cooking. Okay, all right, so we get that. That's a process. Fruit is super, super, super easy to eat, very high in sugar, harder to find in the wild. Vegetables and tubers are much easier to find. They're much more prevalent. Because fruits so respond to temperature and tubers can last a long time in the ground. That's why potatoes are so good. So just think in terms of how God designed things and eat in this way. Likewise with meat. Now, my understanding is in the Garden of Eden, we didn't need meat. After the fall, we needed meat. Blood became involved in how we eat. So the closer you can come to looking at a piece of meat and saying, that's tuna. That's trout. That's cow. And eat that way, I think you'll find yourself much more able to drop weight. Here's one other hint. Don't drink calories. Never drink calories. So don't drink juice. Don't drink milk. Don't drink calories. Here's why. That's really hard to come by in the wild. Go back to the Garden of Eden. So how do you make juice? You get a bunch of fruits or berries, you stomp on it, you remove the seeds, you store it in something that may have not existed in the Garden of Eden. We didn't hear about glasses and silverware. It's hard because it comes out in a very concentrated form. Got that? Don't drink calories. Same thing with milk. It used to be hard to drink milk. You'd have to go find a cow and then get the milk from the cow and put it in a drinkable form. Yes, you could drink it raw, and I do drink raw milk, but I don't drink calories. If I drink raw milk, it's because I'm recovering from a workout. So the more you eat closer to the way God designed things, the less likely you are to become overweight. One other thing, exercise in the way God designed. Now, here's what I mean. Yes, I lift weights. I do gymnastics. I swim. I bike. I do plyometrics. I mean, CrossFit is the routine is the enemy of our success. So you might see me one day doing 3-rep deadlifts and the next day running a vested 5K, or maybe even in the same day. But that's me. The easiest way to look at this from a weight loss perspective is this. Exercise in the way God designed. Walking and running. You were designed to run. All of us were designed to run. Giving up running is one of the worst things we do, because as little kids, we run. We're expressing the joy God gave us. Find the thing that brings about joy in you. We were designed to use our bodies. You are designed to jump. Now, it might be that your knees are so broken right now that you can't jump, so don't, but you're designed to step up on things. Like stairs or standing up on a box. We're all somewhere in pursuit of our fitness. Use your body the way God designed it. So, David, I hope that's helpful. Look, the Bible's so useful on everything. Second note today from Sharon, Charlottesville, South Carolina. Sharon writes, "Dear Todd, I listen to you on AFR and I watch your podcast on YouTube. My question relates to something you said about raising your daughter. You speak often about your regrets, and that concerns me because it doesn't sound very grateful. Could you give yourself some grace and talk about some areas where you think you did a good job in parenting? I'd really appreciate hearing that rather than just the regrets of you, Sharon." I guess this one makes me uncomfortable too. Where I've done a good job. I did a good job, I think, well, in reading. One of the things we did very, very early on, and this was a huge thing with me, and man, this paid off, is I would very early on challenge my daughter to speak. So when she was a little baby, I would say things like, "Can you say this? What's that?" I would point things out, or do this. "You're wearing your red shirt. And I see you have your green shoes on." Creating compound thoughts, red shoes, green shirt. So she could identify, this is a shirt, these are shoes. My dad is using a color. So it was this language development. And then in reading, this was a trick my mom taught me. It was has a master's degree in early childhood education. When I read with her, I would underline the sentences we were reading with my finger, knowing she couldn't read them at the time, but she was following the left to right motion. Oh, I see. My dad is reading these words now. Now he's reading these words. And as she followed along and her eyes began to track, eventually she was gaining this confidence because we'd read the same books again and again and again. So what happened was really, really shocking. This shocked my mom, who had this degree in early childhood education. I was changing my daughter's diaper, and she was about a year and probably a year and 8 months. And I was wearing a shirt, a Rydell sports shirt. And my little baby touched my left arm. I'll never forget this because it had an R from the Rydell logo. And my little 18-month-old said, "Daddy's R." My mom said, "Oh, neat. She's memorized what an R is." I said, "No, she knows letters." "Hun, she knows what an R is." "Mom, she knows letters." I took her down after changing her diapers. I said, "Go get Daddy an A." And she went and brought me an A. "Get Daddy a B." And then we did this. "Honey, will you get Daddy the yellow B? Bring me the yellow B and the red C." She went over 18 months and she grabbed these things. I'll never forget this moment. We worked so hard on reading, so hard. She was reading very well by the time she was 4 or 5. And we were sitting in a park in Virginia. And my little girl was in kindergarten. She was sitting there in her school dress that was at formal school. And it was this light blue dress. She's got this blonde hair, these blue eyes. She had her legs crossed and she was writing. And she was peacefully writing in the park. And this woman came over And she said, pardon me, is that your kid? I said, yeah. She said, what's she doing? I said, ask her. She said, honey, what are you doing? She said, I'm writing poetry. This lady looked at me and said, she's writing poetry? Man, did you win the genetic lottery? I said, yeah, we got really lucky. And I kind of laughed. Now, what I'm about to tell you could sound very judgmental. I don't have any capacity to judge anyone's parenting, because the question from Sharon was, I talk a lot about my regrets as a parent. Could I please share some successes? That's one, is reading and loving that. And my daughter's very smart that way. But that lady came back with her 13-year-old son, who wasn't mentally slow at all. He didn't have any apparent mental challenges. But at the age of 13, he had wet himself playing soccer. And it kind of spoke a little bit to the genetic lottery one. So I thank you for your emails. Again, you can write to me at thetoddhermanshow.com. And by the way, feel free to challenge me on any view I take on this show. The more challenging the email, the more fun it is to me to respond. And understand, I'm not an advice columnist, not a lawyer, but I'll answer all the questions we can. We'll try to do this more often on Friday. We'll come back with the Tower Babbling. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll get to the Tower of Babbling here in a moment. If you've listened to the program for any length of time, you know that I am a proponent of the magic word theory. That, for instance, the word transgender is magic because it shuts down argument and logic. If you ask a society, hey, should men be able to force women to look at them naked in the shower? Society's going to say, no. That's perverted and wrong. But if you say it this way, should trans women be able to shower with other women? People say, well, of course, trans women are women. It's a magic word. Likewise, the magic word of debt ceiling. No, don't worry, our Congress is debating our debt ceiling. We don't have a ceiling. You don't get to raise ceilings multiple times, maybe once. Every 2 years, every 18 months, that's not a ceiling. Magic words are powerful because they implant ideas. Here's another one. The CEO of Bayer, the pharmaceutical giant, is on tape. I've got the audio. I guess I could have pulled it. Of him admitting that the COVID shots were not vaccines. These were as they were being disseminated. He said it to other pharma executives, so safe company. He said, if you'd ask society, do you want to have a gene sequencing device? Do you want to have your body's genes manipulated with a shot? People would say, well, no. I mean, paraphrasing, he said people would say no. But when you tell them it's a vaccine, oh, well, vaccines, of course. Vaccines are safe and effective. Everybody says so. They can't cause any problems. There's no problems. It's a magic word. Sadly, the word democracy is also a magic word. It's sacrosanct. It should be. But it's losing all meaning. Leftists have a habit of making words lose meaning. You can't be a leftist and define what a woman is. You can't be a leftist and define what racism is. Because if I ask you, is a group of black people who says whites are inferior, are they racist? If you're a leftist in full, you can't answer that question. The answer is something along the lines of, well, we think it's oppressed people. They have a right to fight back. So they've made democracy into a magic word. A guy named Bill DiAgostino from Newsbusters, he's one of the video editors there. He did a brilliant thing. He identified, and I don't know that he thinks of it this way, but he identified magic words, the magic word democracy. What he did is he used AI, an AI voice cloning software, which is frightening enough, to replace the word democracy with the word bureaucracy. He did this with media figures talking about our democracy and how President Trump is a threat to our democracy. But tell me, does this make more sense when he replaced the word democracy with bureaucracy?
If the Democrats fail, it might be the end of American bureaucracy.
Our bureaucracy really is in fundamental peril.
The foundations of American bureaucracy under attack.
They want to destroy our bureaucracy.
We are a bureaucracy in danger.
We're watching an election where people are on the ballot openly advocating the end of bureaucracy.
That's what Republicans are doing, attacking bureaucracy, attempting to destroy bureaucracy, and they're doing it with glee.
This is the end of bureaucracy in America.
When will America stop sleepwalking towards the end of bureaucracy?
Right. It's Democrats versus, as Bill Kristol says, the end of bureaucracy.
We are essentially, as Neil put it, one vote away from sort of the end of bureaucracy.
See how that works? You state a thing as what it is, and suddenly the magic words is revealed. So what is bureaucracy? Well, it's another magic word, a deep state. So, you know, that magic word, that will flat frighten people. There's no deep state. Okay. Is there a permanent government? Well, I guess so. Well, there is. There's people like Christopher Wray, who was given a 10-year term to work with the FBI. Now, I consider him to be absolutely disgraced. And there's permanent bureaucracy types who can work in government for 40 years. Permanent government. Wait a minute. Isn't that a threat to democracy? Unelected officials who are a permanent government holding sway over elected officials who are temporary. In 2022, that same disgraced FBI director, Christopher Wray, lied under oath when he claimed the FBI only monitors social media for threats of violence and nothing else. He was talking to Rand Paul.
Companies are referring information to the FBI with investigative value relating to foreign malign influence. Now, there'd probably be a great deal more tolerance about that if it's foreign malign influence. But the question is, are you also receiving information on so-called domestic? What would that mean? Is someone questioning whether paper ballots are an accurate way of running election? Is that good enough for you to be getting our private information because we have a political beef with the way votes are counted or recorded in our country? Is that something that you're collecting information on? Are they giving you information on private things that you've told them? Well, people who question the election, we want to hear about these people. And so then they're giving you this information. Are you receiving information?
I'll give you two classic examples that I think happen with some frequency. One, if we supply information to, say, Facebook or any number of other technology companies about foreign accounts, Russian intelligence service, for example, accounts, when they then look in their system for those accounts, they often find other accounts related to those, and they provide tips and leads back to us about those. That's one example. A second would be a situation where a technology company encounters a threat of violence on their platform, on their services, and they provide tips and leads to us, and we follow up on those threats of violence.
And there's not a lot of disagreement about that. The question is when we start to talk about political speech, and that is the question, are you receiving things that could be interpreted, and we'd want to know, and if you're not going to admit to us, whether it's political speech, someone who questions the election, you know, someone who is mad about something that is going on, but it's not saying they're directly going to commit violence, they're mad about things. What the New York Post article said is, yes, you're getting this. And then when they're finally read in context, and this is from a whistleblower, which makes us suspect you're not being forthcoming or honest with us, is that whistleblowers are saying you are receiving this information from Facebook and others, and that you are going around the Constitution then to come back and try to get warrants for it. But then once you read it, there's been no actionable intelligence on this, but this is an active program that you've got. If you work for the government, you should admit to us whether or not you have a program going after our speech.
And they did. The FBI didn't just want to know about people who question election outcomes. They were concerned that there were people who might question our commitment to the 51st state of Ukraine. That's a permanent government. That's a permanent government who looks in the face of an elected government official and says, I'm not going to answer the question. because they don't have to. And it can be frustrating, things like that. But we do something that may seem oxymoronic, given what we just talked about. On this program, we actually thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people like Chris Ray on these tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
The president takes shouty questions. I understand, John. I've dealt with this question about three times already. I understand.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in today's Tower of Babbling. Almost always three. He's a repeat performer on the Tower Babbling figurehead, Biden.
With regard to the question regarding the family, I'm extremely proud of my son, Hunter. He has overcome an addiction. He's one of the brightest, most decent men I know. And I am satisfied that I'm not going to do anything. I said I'd abide by the jury decision. I will do that, and I will not pardon him.
And he walks away. Now, of course, we know, I mean, it's Friday after all, that he did pardon him. What I'm curious about is to what degree pressure from Jill Biden pressured him to make that decision. Jill and Hunter historically have not gotten along. Text messages from Hunter show that he has a deep, or at least had a deep hatred for Jill Biden. I wonder if she is afraid about what Hunter Biden would have done were he not pardoned. And that's a good bit of fear to have, because Hunter Biden appeared willing to do anything to anybody if it gave him pleasure or power. And to be frank, so did figurehead Biden. So it fell to the spokesliar of the White House, the current spokesliar. And before the pardon, she had to say the party line. Will Joe Biden pardon his son, Hunter?
The president would not pardon or commute the sentence for his son, Hunter. I just want to make sure that that is not going to change over the next 6 months. The president's saying he would not.
It's still a no. It's still a no.
It will always be a no.
It's still a no. It will be a no. It is a no. And I don't have anything else to add. Will he pardon his son? No.
Well, she almost sounded honest there. She probably thought she was. A rare occurrence for the White House spokesliar. Now, way back in time, in 2018, back when there were black and white television shows, and, well, no, not quite that far back, Adam Schiff introduced a bill to keep President Trump from abusing his pardon powers to do things like, say, pardon family members.
So the president's pardon of Scooter Libby, Congressman, has inspired you to propose new legislation. What exactly would it do?
What it would do is say that in the event the president pardons anyone in an investigation in which the president is a witness, a subject, or the target, those investigative files will all be turned over to the Congress. The Congress ought to know whether the president is using the pardon power to obstruct justice. The American people have a right to know.
I wonder if the American people still have a right to know. We should get in touch with Adam Schiff and say, hey, remember that bill you were considering? And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yeah. On A Disciple's View.
Mark from Cincinnati, Ohio, inspires today's personal note. It's a personal response to Mark, who wrote after Wednesday's program. Dear Todd, I listen to your program on AFR every opportunity I have. I also have joined your podcast and your YouTube channel. I've heard you mention from time to time that you had to put your daughter in a treatment facility. Sadly, my wife and I find ourselves in that very similar position. Briefly, our daughter is 13, has been cutting herself and burning herself, as we understand it, for about 6 months. She's made two serious attempts at suicide and a couple less serious attempts. She, like other kids, has convinced herself that she was born in the wrong body. We've told her that that's not God's plan. We're doing everything we can to be affirming of her pain and what she feels, but we simply cannot agree that she gets to choose her gender. You've mentioned that there are some things we should know about treatment facilities and pharmaceuticals, and I'm wondering if you could maybe expand on that. My wife and I are not in a state of panic, but real concern and fear, as I think you could understand it. Anything that you could do to help us with this, we'd appreciate it. Thank you for your ministry on AFR and A Disciple's View. Mark from Cincinnati, Ohio. Mark, thank you for the note. And man, what you're going through is the hardest thing. Nothing can pain us like watching our kids be in pain. And you're probably on suicide watch. I imagine you've probably drawn family members into this, that if you work and you didn't say in your note, if you did, I'm assuming you do, and your wife is home all day, I bet she is absolutely exhausted when she gets home. You're probably afraid that your daughter's going to be kidnapped medically. You should be. And please start with this. Please remember the book of Job. There are things happening in the spiritual background about which you are unaware. There are things happening that God is doing. Please do not make the demons of this world stronger than God. Please have confidence that he holds promise for your daughter, that she knows him. I'm sure he does, given your note. I'm sure she knows the Lord, and the Lord obviously knows her. Please start there. In terms of putting kids in treatment, yes, she's going to meet some kids who are troubled. She's going to live with them. I would ask you, once she's in treatment, to go through something I wish I had said to my daughter. I didn't know. I wish I'd said to her, you're smart enough to fake it in here. You are. You're smart enough to fake agreeing with your therapists. You're smart enough to pull that off. Now, it's going to take a while because the therapists know that kids are going to try to play nice to get out of here. They know all that. So faking it might mean you're here a longer period of time. And you might fake it. You might get away with this. But you won't get help. Not to the degree that you can. The only reason we have you here is because we love you and we fear for your life. So fake it and stay longer and don't get the help, or dig in. I'm not asking you to agree with everything they say. I'm asking you to take the good pieces and apply it where you can. Because to do otherwise, I don't know that you make it out of here with a chance to have the decent life that your mother and I just need you to have. I'd start with that. I'll talk about this further in a different show, Mark. In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. Until God gives us permission to speak again together, may his peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This is Ben, A Disciple's View.